The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. I should never doubt that New Yorkers would show up on a rainy day. Thank you for coming. This is from The Hidden Lamp, 25 centuries of stories of awakened women. It's called The Old Woman's Relatives from 9th century China. Once a monk on a pilgrimage met an old woman living in a hut. The monastic asked, "Do you have any relatives?" She said, "Yes." The monastic asked, "Where are they?" She answered, "The mountains, rivers, and the whole earth, the plants and trees are all my relatives." That's it. So, an old woman living alone in a hut. I can relate. Sometimes people ask me my pronouns, and I say she, her, hermit. But usually in these old stories of Chinese Buddhist hermits, the term applied to educated men who were fleeing social expectations, corrupt, immoral governments, and they would go into a hermit life. And here in this koan, we find a woman, an old woman, living alone as a hermit. And in many of the koans of women, we seldom get names. There's a few, but usually it's an old woman on the side of the road, an old woman living in a hut. We don't have the names. And so I was looking up women hermits living in China under Confucian law, and there weren't any that I could find. That doesn't mean they weren't there. But usually, from birth to death, they were subject to take care of the male members of the household, husbands, sons, father-in-laws, brothers. So it's rarely we find a woman hermit. And this koan I liked for that reason. There's a woman hermit. And it was neither safe nor allowed for them to live alone. So she did. Was she alone? Was she lonely? So I thought this would be a good entry point for something I've wanted to talk about, which is loneliness. We all feel it. We all have it at different times. I've lived in a monastery for 30 plus years. I've had a partnership for a couple decades, not at this moment. I've lived with 30 to 40 people around me every day. I would see them every day. And yet I could feel lonely. I have people, family, stability. I've talked to longtime meditators, connected with sanghas, Zen teachers. All have spoken about times of loneliness, long and short in duration. Thich Nhat Hanh says, and many others speak of loneliness as the ill-being of our time. There's a lot you can read, and I'll try and keep this short, but I had a lot coming out on this topic, so there might be a part two. I'll keep track of the time. It's not for the faint of heart. It happens. If we are with others or not. So I thought, how do we understand loneliness? What's at the root of it? And I was feeling of the many ways I try to ease it, assuage it, alleviate it. Many ineffective ways, actually, which trying to make it go away, and sometimes something will work for briefly, and then it's still there. It's still there. The feeling is still there. Philosopher David White, I have his book called Consolations. Some of you may know of it. He calls loneliness a privilege in that humans may be the only beings that can articulate, imagine, or call for a specific life they feel they may be missing. He calls it a substrate of belonging, of wanting to find our way home, to belong to ourselves, and be in togetherness, alone together. Pema Chodron speaks about how we regard loneliness as an enemy when we experience it, how heartache of being alone is not something we choose to invite in. She describes it well by saying how it is so full-bodied and hot with desire to escape, find someone or something to keep us company. So if we just stay on the surface of it and turn outward for those things, those places, people to comfort us, loneliness might only be alleviated just for a little while. So I'm not sure that there's just one word for lonely or for this condition. We find a lot of definitions, but I don't think there's just one word to describe it. I think we should put aside concepts that fits and instead look at our own visceral experience. Look into that in the midst of our life here now and how we feel it. And I feel like it's an enormous relief just to claim that feeling, that in itself brings that belonging right back. And when I speak and meet with those who suffer deeply from loneliness, I hear these words: feeling isolated, all alone, not understood, not cared or loved in a sincere way, not trusting anything good will come along. And personally, I felt that so much of the suffering comes from trying to hide this state. You know, you don't want to say, I'm lonely. So we sort of do stuff around it. I do, at least. And despite that I'm sitting there with someone, like someone has done with me, and there's openness and there's contact with them, and it's held well, I notice that it moves on in its own due time. You can't force it. Something seems to need to work itself out from this place. So what is it that we fear there or make into an enemy? We want to stay connected. I mean, we're always connected now, and we continue to feel lonely. Checking email several times a day, sending emails several times a day, because we want to share, we want to receive. And technology does supply us with devices, as we all know, to connect. But does it, I ask, help reduce that feeling of loneliness within us? Who has not tried to use any of that or other unskillful devices or vices to dissipate the searing feeling of loneliness? And how's that going? So the real medicine is to dig in there, to face and see what is what it's truly about. And I wouldn't say this if I haven't done this difficult work myself. And it's liberating. It's liberating to go there. I notice sometimes a sense of loneliness as I was saying, in this very innermost core of my being that I just can't share. It can't be communicated to another. And that seems to be juxtaposed with, I want to be seen. I'm longing to be known, embraced, experienced, feeling, felt. Sometimes lonely feels like thick walls, doors locked, and sometimes it's just too big. The sky's too blue. I remember one time, the autumn was coming. It was like fluorescent out there, you know, those bright autumns, and it was unbearable. The beauty, I just couldn't, in that lonely feeling, it was just hard to look at. It was interesting. Too painful to take in. And I imagine our first lonely came when we cried out and no one came. The sense of being this one body completely dependent upon the world began to take shape. Some lonely carries with it a sense of something deeply amiss inside our core. Like there's an old worn out message of wrongness going right to the heart of our most innocent years. And if we give up the idea that it's an enemy and how to get rid of it, maybe we can rest in the searing feeling and let it teach us something. We can consult with the night sky, consult with Mother Earth, the mountains, the plants, the whole earth as our relatives. And from my humble midlife zone, there's nothing inherently wrong with being lonely. What seems most helpful as a practitioner of the Buddha's way is to notice with our lonely, what do we do with our lonely? And see if we can put that reaction aside or move into that reaction. And of course, Zazen, in my humble opinion, is great medicine, which you just learned today, many of you, to sit down with ourself. And every time we sit on the cushion, we connect with ourself. And then we can bring that breath of connection into our daily life, where we often get disconnected from ourselves. So just that simple way of being with our breath and reconnecting, we can remember and bring that into our life as we're moving through the world. And for sure, the practice has to be tended and cared for. If not, we walk, but we don't know we're walking. We're there, but we don't know that we're there. I like that line from Postcards on the Edge. I always repeat it many times. Shirley MacLaine's movie, she writes a postcard. Having a great time, wish I was here. Something like that. We're alive, but we don't know we're alive. So we're losing ourselves. We're not ourselves. And this can be happening almost all day long in that feeling. So that act of sitting down with ourselves is often called a revolution. That we can stop the state of losing ourselves, losing contact with ourselves, and not being ourselves. And we don't need anything or anyone, really. No latte with ice while we're sitting there. No cell phone. No computer. No hugs. Just to sit and breathe. To walk. Just sitting down mindfully and breathing mindfully, knowing I am taking an in-breath. I am taking an out-breath. That's where our life is. What a revolution. It's quite startling that within a few seconds, a few seconds, we can connect with ourselves. Just a few seconds. And we can know what's going on with the body, our feelings, our emotions, our perceptions, in some way. In some way. And we can see we're already home. So many people come for the first time and learn Zazen and sit down with themselves and they say, I feel like I've come home. When they meet practice, I feel like I've come home. Yeah, we hear it so much. So we have to learn how to take care of home. We may notice we've left home for a long time. And you know what happens when you leave home for a long time? It becomes a mess. Well, at least where I live, all the mice come out. And it's a mess when I get home. So arriving home is sitting with ourselves, being with ourselves, accepting the situation as it is, as it is. And at first, when we sit down, it can be very inconvenient, a lot of discomfort, very uncomfortable. And so we need to weed through those expectations too of what's supposed to happen in meditation or Zazen, some state that we want to get to. No, we're just sitting down just to see with what is. If we can be welcoming, that's always helpful. There's a phrase from Dogen I love. Dogen's a 12th century Zen master. No creature ever fails to cover the ground upon which it stands. No creature, we're creatures, no creature fails to cover the ground upon which it stands. This is always, always true. But in a way, it's not always true for each of us. We have to discover that it's true. Always was, still is. No creature fails to cover the ground on which we stand. So, you know, we sometimes look at the past and shoulda, woulda, coulda. But at that moment, we were totally covering the ground upon which we stand. And we'll see it differently now. But at that moment, we were probably doing the best we can do. And sometimes best looks different. And hopefully we learn from what we need to do. Buddha nature is always with us, even if we're a hot mess and lonely. We still have the Buddha nature. We still have the potential for Buddhahood, the potential for the awakened nature to be realized and manifested. It's right here in this expression. Every expression is expression of Buddha nature, Buddhahood. Plants, trees, rocks, animals, mountains, and rivers, as far as we know, are always fully who they are. They fully cover the ground. I don't know, I've never heard a rock saying anything bad about themselves. You know, I'm kind of hard. They don't doubt themselves. They don't criticize themselves. I never heard a plant saying like, oh, I'm not good enough to go to the light. You know? No, they just want to get there. That's their nature. They just go. They don't doubt. They fulfill their being completely. And we do too. And because of the way we're wired, we actually need to make that connection for ourselves and that it flowers and lives from within, yeah? Are you here alone? Do you have any relatives? I don't know. When I sat with that, it felt like the monastic was a little unsure of himself and what he was encountering. Who knows you're here? Are you permitted? Are you allowed to be here alone? Are you lonely? She says, yes, I have relatives. Just look around, dear monk. Everywhere. Everywhere. Just look around, dear creatures. Everywhere. Trees, mountains, clouds, rivers. Show me one thing I'm not related to. She isn't alone. None of us are alone. However, we may feel as though we are. In the absolute condition of our lives, we hear the Heart Sutra. There's not a single thing that's born, that dies. And in between, in a relative life, we are always in relationship with everything. Relationship is where entanglements happen. That's life on planet Earth. That's why we practice to free ourselves from entanglements, division. When we know there's nothing fixed in anything, it's not solid, it's in a constant state of change, flux. And we're that too. But we reify and project and solidify. Our practice of stepping off the 100-foot pole, getting a glimpse of Prajna wisdom. So Prajna wisdom is the wisdom of emptiness. And so just in that moment where you see a thought and you might let go, there might just be a gap there that's just a gap, right? That's it, right? I can't even say that's it because it's not a thing. It's an experience. It's a way of being. Something opens in us that way. And it takes a lot of courage and bravery to enter practice because essentially we're getting unstuck. We're getting unbound from what we bound up, which takes someone. It takes someone to bind us. And we're freeing that idea, completely shifting our way of perceiving reality, seeing its true nature, undoing a pattern that's not just our pattern. It's a human pattern, an ongoing human pattern, where we project onto the world that we can have a world without embarrassment, brighter and whiter teeth, everything cleaned up. Tell me about it if you know it. I want to know. Trungpa Rinpoche said, he made a warning, like, if you're going to start to practice, be careful because you can't turn back. Because once you start to see things, once you know, it's hard to say, I don't know, you know? So rather what we deserve is the middle way. We speak of the middle way a lot. That's our birthright, this open state of mind where we can relax in uncertainty, because uncertainty is true. Things are uncertain, ambiguous. That's true. We don't like that all the time. We want things not to be uncertain, but there's little ones, like, are there going to be avocados in the store when I go after this? That's a small uncertainty. Somebody has that problem. And then there's larger ones looming that we just don't know. So that's for real. So Pema would say, how do we hold paradox? Or Jung would say, how do we hold the tension of opposites where there's no division, where we don't divide? Right? The Faith Mind poem, some of you are working with that. The great way is not difficult. Just don't pick and choose. Does that mean we don't pick and choose? But how does that not be dualistic? Where's the problem in there, right? Pema says, she wrote, to be without a reference point is the ultimate loneliness. Can you feel that? Having no reference point, that's lonely. That's the ultimate loneliness. It's also called enlightenment, having no reference point. It's a huge shift. We make that true discovery that we are inseparable. We are related to everything. You and I are the same thing in that fundamental absolute nature. And I'm not you, and you're not me. Hallelujah. And we can have all this diversity because of emptiness, that all these miraculous things can blossom in all these different ways, in perfect accord, never failing to cover the ground upon which it stands. Said that when the Buddha realized himself, he must have been the loneliest person on the planet. Why would he say that? Why would that be said? He was the loneliest person on the planet. He didn't think that others, you know, he went through so much and he thought, oh my God, I don't know if others could see. So he walked around for a while, seeing if he should, what he should do. Should he just disappear? Should he try and teach this? And then it said, a Brahmin came and spoke to him and said, some people will be able to see it. You should teach. So he went back to his cohort of ascetics and he started to teach the Four Truths. But he was very lonely at that moment. And yet he'd seen through everything. What is that? We don't need to add to suffering. What Buddha taught is neither a path of denial nor of affirmation. He showed us how to live the middle way, with seeming paradoxes, living within the tension of the opposites. He says how to be fully in the world, but not of the world, not taken by it. So Zazen is a way for us to train in the middle way, to stay right on the hot spots. We're encouraged not to judge what arises in the mind. Don't judge if it's good or bad, if you should have it or you shouldn't have it. We're encouraged not to grasp whatever arises, but simply acknowledge thinking and repoint to our object of focus, the breath. So we don't suppress, we don't deny, and we don't supply. The middle way. Don't deny it. This has arisen. Don't supply it. Papanka, proliferate. Keep going. Whole storyline. Just see what arrives. And it's going to take some time, like a lifetime, because we haven't trained ourselves to see in such a way and work with ourselves. Who learned that in school? This is how you work with your mind and thoughts. Not me. It's like touching a bubble with a feather. Like that. And then there we discover this very fresh state of being. When I experience the arising of feelings like loneliness, boredom, and anxiety, I want resolution. What do I do with this? I want to resolve it. I want to grab it. I want to take a side. I want this, I don't want that. That's allowed in, not that. Get out. It's hard to be in raw discomfort. And that's where we get stuck. Conjuring up then a familiar identity to save ourselves. I'm not like that, I'm like this. We want to get some ground. Maybe we're even telling someone off in our head. That makes us feel maybe a temporary relief. So we practice, accept the edginess of not this, not that. Live in that unresolved state. Very difficult. But that's how we get unstuck. It's like we have to guard that. It's like we're little rascals in our head. It's like the weasels in Wind of the Willows, you know, when the toad left and they just took over the house, right? Well, that's what happens if we're not guarding with introspection, then rascals take over the house, right? We just go all over the place. So we sit down so we can see what's running about and take care of our house. So we will have withdrawal symptoms. Yeah. That's practice. And this withdrawal, believe me, years of withdrawal. I mean, it's a journey, but it's so worth it because you're freeing yourself each time. You're just getting clearer and clearer on what binds us, what isolates us, what's separate. We've been addicted to there's a problem and somewhere, someone needs to fix it. And my teachers are very fond of saying, no one's going to save you. I hear people echoing it. I heard that the very first day I received beginning instruction. Nobody is going to save you. And it was a mixed feeling. Because part of me was really upset. And part of me was like, yes, this is my practice. But it was so mixed. Like I so sometimes want to yell, mommy, or somebody, save me. And I know where it is. Gotta come home. Let me check my time so I don't talk too much. There's a woman at a, came for Sesshin a while ago, and she came to Daesan. She identified herself as being 51, a social worker, who worked many years in a clinic in New York City, was a committed meditator, and she took this time off to do Sesshin. And at the beginning, it was very hard for her to quiet her mind. And she was telling me her beloved brother had re-entered a psychiatric ward, had a schizophrenic break. She said she was entirely flooded with emotion, overwhelmed by fear, confusion, shakiness, anger, grief. And I sat with her quietly and I said, yes, this is all here. Yes, it's all happening. There's these moments of that's what's on your arising. Yes, this is the makeup of your now. Do you see that it's changing? Can you let it be unresolved in your heart, unfixable? Just let it be. You came, you're here now, you have a practice, just sit with what arises with compassion. Simply walk on the earth, eat your food, sleep, let things settle in their own time. And then she came in again and she said, the feelings and the stories got stronger about him after we talked about that, got stronger. Her past, all the people involved, and she doesn't know what she'll do. That's that withdrawal symptom. So she had a moment where it calmed down and then it came flooding back in again, right? So that addiction to flooding in, right? And I remember Ajahn Chah telling this story of, that our meditation is like we're sitting at a clear forest pool. And he says, all kinds of wonderful, rare animals will come to drink at the pool. And you will clearly see the nature of all things. You will see many strange and wonderful things come and go, but you will be still. So I encouraged her to just acknowledge one by one all the inner wild animals that come and drink at her still pool. Just see and try and be welcoming. No resolution, let that be the revolution. And she began to name them fear of loss, fear of control, fear of death, fear of living fully, grief, and clinging to a previous relationship, longing for a partner, but wanting to be independent, all these fear for her brother, anxiety about money, anger at the healthcare system that she had to battle every day at her job, gratitude for her coworkers, everything just came up and out. And she says, you want me to sit in the middle of all of that at a clear pond, the messiness, the hopes and fears? I said, yeah, take your seat like a queen on a throne. Allow the play of life, the joys, the sorrows, the fears, the confusions, the birth and the death around, and not think you can or have or even that it's possible to fix anything. Stop managing. Just let be. Trying to control the air, the earth, the water, the fire. Let them come into perfect balance. Don't interfere. Become one with the way, not in the way of the way. Just sitting still, willingly learning what is true. Allowing it to all be. Every intense feeling coming and going. And we're just like swimming. We're just like floating. So she relaxed and she gradually became more still and present. She said her meditation felt more spacious. Her strong states and feelings arose, seemed more impersonal. Waves of energy. Her body became lighter. Joy. She said, I got joyful at one point. She was freaked out. And then it got clingy and worse again. Her mind was like, again, wild horses. So we do this a million times over and over in practice. Sometimes we're like wild horses. Sometimes it calms down. I reminded her again about sitting in the middle of it all. And she said she was, and she was still happy. And then she left Sashin. She just left. I was like, wow, okay. She just left. And then I reached out to her, and I've been in touch with her ever since. We're actually friends now over several years. Her outer circumstances have not really improved. Her work, her brother, her health are still difficulties she continues to face every day. But her heart is more at ease. She faces. She sits quietly almost every day in what she would say the messiness of my life and tells me Zazen has helped her find the middle path and the inner freedom she hoped for. She says, I've returned to a center. I'm not going to let my past karma and these obstacles rob me of my presence. She was laughing and saying, like the Buddha, she said, I just say, oh, that's you, Mara. Hi, Mara. I know your name. Mara is like the tempting things that come into our mind that pull us away from the direction we want to go in. She says, "My Mara can be my grief, hopes, my body, my pain, my fear, all of it is just life. The middle way is so deep. It's all of them and none of them. It's always here." Yeah. The sage Shanti Deva called the middle way complete non-referential ease. Empty, and yet we are experiencing. Mutually arising. The perfect wisdom text described it as a realization of suchness beyond attainment of good or bad, ever present with all things as both the path and the goal. Another teacher wrote, the middle path does not go from here to there. It goes from there to here. We can be with all our experience, all the complexity, with our exact thoughts, with our exact feelings, our drama, and at the very same time, we can feel the support to release to non-referential, cool ease. The very same time. Pema called this kind of resting in the middle having a non-threatening relationship to loneliness. A relaxing, cooling loneliness that completely turns our fearful patterns upside down. So I'm going to briefly describe the cooler lonelinesses, six of them that Pema mentions in her book, When Things Fall Apart. It's a good title. Her titles are so good, right? When Things Fall Apart, she says, less desire, contentment, avoiding unnecessary activity, complete discipline, not wandering into the world of desire, and not seeking security from one's discursive thoughts. This is the cool loneliness. So briefly, less desire. Willing to be lonely without resolution when everything in us yearns for something to cheer us up. Change our mood. Practicing sows seeds so the fundamental restlessness decreases. So in Zazen, we're not getting so run around by our thoughts. And we train in just being here without disassociating. Less solidity. Less being seduced by our very, very important storylines. And if loneliness is hot, she says, stay for 2 seconds and sit with that restlessness. The less we spin off and go crazy, the more we taste the satisfaction of cool loneliness. One can be lonely and not tossed away by it. Loneliness is contentment when we have absolutely nothing to lose, only the programs in our guts that tell us we have something to lose, which is rooted in fear. Fear of loneliness, change, of anything that can't be resolved, of not existing. So losing the reference point, drawing no lines. We don't put ourselves on either side. Okay, a few more. And that's what we have to go through a million times before we make friends with our dread. The same old thing, I can't tell you, billions of times. with awareness. And then it happens, the shift happens without us noticing. It's just does something happens. We're lonely with no alternatives, content to be right in the mood and texture of what's happening. This is possible. Loneliness and avoiding unnecessary activities. When loneliness is heated, really heated up in us, we look for something to save us, a way out, and we get that nauseous feeling that we're so alone. And our minds go wild trying to come up with companions to save us from despair, unnecessary activity. A way of keeping ourselves busy so we don't feel the pain taking the form of incessantly daydreaming, a romance, turning a tidbit of gossip into a mountain, or withdrawing and disappearing. The point of all these activities is seeking companionship in our usual habitual way, she says. Same old repetitive ways of distancing ourselves from the demon of loneliness. So she says, can we practice settling down? Practice settling down. Have compassion and respect for yourself. Complete discipline. At every turn, we're willing to come back to the present moment. That's a complete discipline. Not wandering into the world of desire, looking for alternatives, seeking some comfort in food, drink, drugs, you name it. Desires that have an addictive quality. And not seeking security from our discursive thoughts. No way to get out of this one. Not even seeking companionship, she says, of our own constant conversation with ourselves, how it is and how it isn't. Whether it is or whether it isn't, should or it shouldn't. No security from our own internal chatter. This is why we're instructed to Zazen, to see the thoughts as ungraspable. Just touch the chatter, like a feather touching a bubble. Let it go. Don't make a big deal about it. Dropping the deals, who we think we are or ought to be. So, on this pilgrimage, a person meets an old woman living alone in a hut. The monk asks, "Do you have relatives?" "Yes." "Where are they?" "The mountains, rivers, the whole earth, the plants and trees are all my relatives." She's showing us the way. Our hearts and minds are unlimited. It reaches and is related to everything. And what we deserve, our birthright, is that middle way, that coolness that doesn't go to one side or the other. There's a beautiful sentence in the Dhammapada. "Just as the birds enjoy the sky and deer enjoy the meadow, so do the wise dwelling in peace." An open state of body and mind that can relax with ambiguity. Our naturalness is holding no reference point. That's natural. Connected to all our relatives, absolutely. So, yeah, the cry of our loneliness has a seat at the table, for sure. So does our tenderness. Don't ever think anything is out of place or doesn't cover the ground which it stands. I'm so grateful that we can come together in this place, in our belonging, to understand what is actually true. So I look forward to great travels with you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.